Hello and welcome to Jaw Law. I'm your host, Joe McGregor, from the exotic metropolis of Dallas, Texas, and from the law firm of McGregor and Oblad. And today, we are going to talk about my pet peeves of employment contracts. Now, to be honest with you, pet peeves just sounded a little more alliterative, but honestly, these are more like annoyances. Maybe pet peeves, I don't know. The point is, today isn't going to be a list of the worst things to find in your contract. We've kind of already talked about that. Today, instead, what we're talking about are things that maybe I don't think the practice is being totally honest or transparent, or maybe I see them and I just think, okay, that's obviously not fair, or I just don't think that they are needed. Either way, they are pet peeves of mine, also because a lot of times practices are unwilling to change. Number one, paying someone as an independent contractor when you really want to treat them as an employee. Let me be clear on this. I am not evaluating or stating that an independent contractor relationship is wrong. Tons of clients are independent contractors, and I'm not saying it's better or worse than being an employee. My pet peeve is when a contract on the top says independent contractor agreement, and then inside the body of the contract, it's just full of employment-like provisions. And the only reason the practice is fashioning this as an independent contractor is just so that they can get out of some employment taxes. That is annoying. And yes, sometimes those people are pretty resistant to changing that. When especially you go to them and you say, hey, listen, you've got an employment contract, not an independent contractor contract. They don't care because they want the best of both worlds. They want to call you an independent contractor so that they can save on taxes, but they're not willing to give you the freedom that an independent contractor should have. Anyway, it's annoying. Number two, long-term contracts. Now, again, and I probably will do this with every single one of these, there are times and there are reasons why a long-term contract makes sense. Again, we have clients who employ people under long-term contracts. But I think people need to ask themselves, why? Why is this practice trying to lock me into a long-term contract? What happened to the person before me that they felt they needed to come back and put in a really long provision? If the practice is treating you right and they are paying you well, you have all the incentive to stay there. What is missing from this relationship where they need or they feel they need to lock you in for a long-term contract? I think the other question you have to ask, if I'm unhappy here, like if it's a 2-year contract and 6 months in, I am miserable, do you really want me for the next year and a half? Again, treat me well, pay me well, I'm going to stick around for as long as I can. Like, what is it about your operations that means you can't keep an employee very long? And number three is really just an extension of this because, like we said in a recent episode, some practices will stick liquidated damages onto the end of their contract so that if you got a 2-year contract and you leave early, they punish you. You owe us $50,000 or whatever. There are liquidated damages that could make sense, but that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the ones that they're just there to be mean. And I want to stress that what I'm talking about today is not what I talked about in a recent episode about enforceability. That's different. I'm talking, again, just about the using it as a tool to keep you here. Because again, you have to ask yourself, what happened to the last guy? Why do you feel the need to not just lock me into a long contract, but to punish me if I leave? Again, treat me well, pay me well, I'll stick around. No need to try to scare me into staying, because now you're scaring me from even joining. Next one, collections contracts masked as production ones. I really hate these. I feel, and just me, Joe McGregor, I feel that a lot of times this is a marketing ploy. They are telling you, we pay you on production. Let's just use a number. We pay you 30% of adjusted production. And then you get in the contract. You're like, well, what does adjusted mean? And it turns out that among other things, some of which may or may not be reasonable, but among other things, they say one of the adjustments is for bad debt. So just so that you understand, if you get paid on collections, what's going to happen is you're going to do some work. The office is going to bill for it. Money's going to come in 30 days later. We'll just say 30 days later. They're going to say, all right, here's your 30%. So maybe you're getting this money 30, 45 days later, whatever. But you're not getting it until you collect it. So you're getting your 30% 45 days later in our example. Now, what the practices who are doing this, what they're saying is, hey, we're not going to mess around with that. We're going to pay you instantly. So right when you bill that procedure, they are going to pay you 30% of whatever they billed. And you're thinking, that's great, because it's the practice's responsibility for collecting that money. But they can take out for bad debt. So 3 months rolls around and they still haven't collected on it. Guess what they can do? They can take it out of your check. They can make, that is the adjustment. So the practice is saying, oh, it's not the same as collections because we're paying you up front. Well, what's the difference? 6 months later, it's the same thing. And what is the same thing? It's the same thing as collections, not production. This is a marketing ploy. It's pretty frustrating. And to be honest, you see it a lot in corporate contracts. Next one is kind of annoying. I think that the reason it's annoying is because I think the practices are a little tone deaf when they put this in, but it is the non-disparagement provision. Now, to be honest, and in the interest of full disclosure, this is something that we will from time to time put in our contracts that we draft. What is a non-disparagement provision? Well, it's a provision that says, when you leave here, you are not going to talk crap about us. You're not going to talk to the patients. You're not going to talk to the employees. You're not going to go to Google and make up fake reviews, whatever. You're not going to talk crap about us. Now, that sounds like it's probably reasonable, but the reality is you have to ask yourself, what happened to a previous employee that inspired this practice to think they needed to limit your ability to talk? And from a legal perspective, why this is important and why this is kind of annoying is that there are already remedies at law that guard against people lying about you. So if you leave the practice and you tell people falsities, provable falsities about the practice, they can sue you and they may win. So you have to ask yourself, why are they trying to go above and beyond? They're clearly not just worried about you speaking truth, because that's not what they're protecting, because the law already protects them. So then you have to ask yourself, why does this practice feel compelled to limit people's ability to go out and tell the truth? Now, the one caveat here is that opinions are not protected. And so, I do have to say it is in part to protect from people sharing opinions. Oh, I didn't like it because I thought that they were mean. But still, either way, this isn't like an automatic provision that just shows up in every contract. It's probably the case that something happened previously and the practice owners or owner said, you know what? Let's stop that. We didn't like someone who gave us a review on Glassdoor or Indeed or whatever. So let's limit their ability to talk about us and hurt our recruiting efforts. And the reason I say this is a little tone deaf is because, honestly, sometimes it creates a bigger question than it really answers. And if I ever agree to this, it needs to be mutual. They need to not talk about you as well. All right, this next one I'm seeing in a lot of contracts, and that's uneven termination rights. What that means is they're saying, hey, you can leave at any time as long as you give us 90 days notice. But we can get rid of you at any time as long as we give you 14 days notice or no notice or 30 days notice. Whatever the outcome, it's uneven. And this is where, again, I would ask you, why do they think that they're so much more important or so much busier or so much more thoughtful than you are, that they need a lot of time to replace you, but you don't need a lot of time to replace this job? I think that it says a little something about their mentality and their approach to their employees. If you think about this, any time that it might take a practice a little extra time is probably similar to the reasons that it would take an associate some extra time. Again, with the one caveat, when it is a good economy for the practices, sometimes it can be harder to find an associate. And sometimes the job force kind of flips where it's hard to find a job and it's easy to find an associate. But those are kind of difficult to predict. It's not static. It moves. It fluctuates. And so at the end of the day, again, there's this inherent unfairness of saying, I'm going to need a lot of time because I'm thoughtful. But you're just an associate. You'll take any job you could find. So we'll see you later. Good luck. We're not giving you equal termination rights. All right, this last one I wasn't even going to include, but I am going to include it because I'm a dork. And that is moral superiority clauses. Now, this doesn't show up in most contracts, but from time to time, you'll see these contracts that will have it just evidence that they are morally superior to everyone else. We have the most high standards. We are the very greatest dentists alive. We are the only honest people, and you need to live up to our standards. You know, sometimes these are the code of conduct. Sometimes they're just these ethics that they want to aspire to. The issue is that they're either A, unenforceable. So what are they even doing in a contract? And as a contract dork, if it's not enforceable, it shouldn't be in your contract. It's just taking up space. So why is it even in there? The other thing that I don't like about it, though, so B, is that to the extent it is enforceable, how do you define it? So if it's written in a way that's unenforceable, it would be like, we aspire to be the most professional dentists in the state. But an enforceable way, it says, dentists will be professional at all times. So that's enforceable because it's something we can measure. But the question is, how do you measure professionalism? You can't. It's subjective. It's in the eye of the owner. So either it's in the contract and I just roll my eyes, or it's in the contract and it's impossible. And it's not like you look good when you go to the employer, that the person you're trying to get a job from, and you're like, hey, listen, I need to delete this because I don't know how truly professional I am. So it puts us in a weird position. I just don't like them. They're not useful, and they can corner you into a breach of contract that you didn't even see coming. So I think they're super annoying, and they are one of my and my final pet peeve. And now the world knows what bothers me. I appreciate your time. Thank you so much for listening. I know there's like 5 gajillion dental podcasts out there. Thank you for listening to this one. And I probably sound like a broken record by now, but if you like this one, please share it with your friends. Help spread the word. If you could, please take 20 seconds and give us a rating on whatever podcast catcher you use. It helps people see us. Thank you again so much, and we shall see you next time.